Welcome to America.
Why?
It's not great. Here's a podcast.
All right. This is
Sophie.
The podcast. Welcome
it
to
is.
If you're an international listener and you're not American, that was really
get
rude.
Get the fuck off of
that
our
was
podcast.
Rude. Just like yeah. You just left people out like you that, just, Robert. Are you gonna do one for every other country?
I think they're being rude for barging in. The internet is clearly American soil.
I would pay good money for a Wacko Sings, but with Robert saying all the country, all the countries
too.
Of the world.
Me too.
Well, you know what you need to do in order to be able to pay good money for something, Garrison?
Wow.
You need to get money by working?
Well,
I was
going to say
bank
you need
robbery.
To be born rich, but if you're not born rich, you have to work. And a lot of people are saying, what if we didn't? And now they have a subreddit, and that's what we're talking about today. Anti-work. Not just the subreddit, but that's why we're talking about it today, because the anti-work subreddit has grown hugely. It's gotten like a million. It's doubled. It's been around for years.
It's more than doubled. It's almost quadrupled. I have the numbers for later. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So Garrison, why don't you kick us off now that I've let everyone know what to expect? And I will stop working. In solidarity with the anti-work movement.
Thanks, Robert.
You're welcome.
So yeah, if the past few months, if you're anything like us, and if you're online in the same ways that we are, you've probably seen like a flurry of posts and screenshots depicting text conversations between like an employee and their boss. Typically, the boss like asks them to come in when they said they were gonna have to have time off or something. The employee objects. The boss then gets mad and makes threats and demands the employee be a better team player or some bullshit like that. And then like the employee says something like, well, you know what? Actually, I quit. Good luck filling the shift now. Bye. And then the boss like pleads that the now former employee comes back and offers like concessions and end of screenshot. So pretty soon this type of like screenshotted text conversation became like a meme format with people joking and obviously like staging fake ones as well. Similar to the scene I just described. But by all accounts, this trend started incredibly, like, sincerely with genuine text conversations showcasing, like, worker abuse and bosses being unreasonable and cruel and some people quitting their jobs to stand up for themselves. And all this stuff is kind of tied up in the worker shortage kind of myths.
The great resignation, as a lot of pundits are calling it. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, of people resigning, and then you know a lot of like big companies complaining about worker shortages, and central to this like text conversation online kind of meme trend thing, and employee resignations is a subreddit called Anti-Work. So the anti-work subreddit has been a growing place, specifically the past year. Their motto is "Unemployment for all, not just for the rich." Mm-hmm. It's a good motto.
It is a solid motto. Yeah.
Their own description is a subreddit for those who want to end work, are curious about ending work, want to get the most out of a work-free life, want more information on anti-work ideas, and want personal help with their own jobs/work-related struggles. So back in February, the subreddit's been around since like 2013, but back in February it had like 235,000 subs. And now it has over 1.1 million. It's grown. Most of that growth has been in like the past 2 months. It has kind of exploded in popularity. And actually, it got so big, and there's so many posts on it that they have to like restrict text message conversation screenshots to only being allowed to be posted like on one day a week, just because of the intense influx of these posts. You know, some of them genuine, others maybe not so much. And even though the subreddit may not be the biggest in terms of like subscribers, it has more like daily posts than something like the Wall Street Bets subreddit has. So even though it doesn't have as many subscribers, the amount of actual like posting on it is higher than a lot of other subreddits as well. So it is growing in popularity, in multiple ways.
It feels a little bit right now like the social media equivalent of a sort of Damocles. Like Wall Street Bets made a not insignificant splash earlier this year. It was quite a thing for the national economy for a little while there. And anti-work hasn't had that moment, but I kind of feel like it might be getting close to critical mass. Like something might come out of this.
Yeah.
Which I think would be rad. For the record, I think would be rad.
Absolutely. And, you know, it may not be one big thing, but it could be a lot of smaller things, right? You know, sometimes it's harder to see bigger change when you're, like, having more anarchist-adjacent ideas. And the anti-work subreddit does try to keep itself being a radical subreddit and does try to fight off neoliberal sentiments and stuff.
And there have been some complaints I've seen of people being like, the liberals have gotten in, and people are talking about, like, well, I just really want a life that's like, I'm not stressed all the time and I have enough money for bills and stuff. Or like people have been talking about like, oh, this job, like I left my old job and I got into a better situation and that's good. And there's complaints about that. And I think it is important to like push against de-radicalizing the subreddit. But I don't think it's bad that you're getting a lot of liberals in there who are not turned off by the name anti-work. I think it's positive that they're, even if they're, you know, they're not coming at it from kind of a revolutionary perspective, but hey, it's okay to quit my job if the conditions are shit and try to find a place where I'm treated better. If that's their inroad to this kind of thought, I still think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not realistic for every single person. Well, and actually, it is realistic for every single person to quit their job, but it's not realistic for only a few people to, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes, if everyone's not going to do it, like literally everyone, then you know some people can't afford to quit their job right now because they have like kids to feed or whatever, or themselves, or you know, like there's a lot of reasons, which I'll kind of talk a little bit more about later. So, the term anti-work does not come from the subreddit. And anti-work has been like a post-left term for a while now.
Yes.
And it kind of applies to a broad spectrum of like anarchist adjacent kind of thought around, hey, if we're gonna question like capitalism and the state, we should probably also question just the idea of work itself and how it functions and how the state kind of works only possible with the state and it's that specific line of thinking. A few examples of you know, seminal anti-work books. One of them is Bob Black's The Abolition of Work. CrimeThink has a really good book just called Work, which is another one that gets referenced a lot, even in the subreddit. And also Bullshit Jobs by David Graeber. And Bullshit Jobs was also kind of partially inspired by Bob Black's The Abolition of Work. All of those are great resources. And specifically, like Bullshit Jobs is great for a modern outlook on this. Like Bob Black's book was written a while ago, and Bullshit Jobs is definitely very timely. And even CrimeThink's workbook also addresses stuff. Or even though it wasn't written within the past, I think it is maybe slightly older than a decade. But I think they are updating it with more information about like the gig economy and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's not, as it's characterized and as anti-work is often characterized by critics, it's not saying like nobody should have to do anything. In a way,
no.
It's not actually. We'll talk about Diogenes later. But it's not everyone should just like lay around and do nothing. It's people shouldn't have to do the thing that we call work, which is destroy your body or your mind or both most of your waking hours, most of your life, in the hope that you'll get 10 years as an old person to not do that, like
and a little bit
that's bad. That's a bad way to be a person. Like a bad way to have to be. It's not bad to do that. It's bad that you have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I mean, and there is a little bit of it that is about finding time to chill out.
Well, sure, absolutely.
Which is going to apply a lot of, you know, a lot of the ways. If you have to keep a job, you know, the different ways you can go about that job that makes it so it doesn't like kill you. One of my favorite ways to think about anti-work is just like anti-capitalism put into actual practice. So instead of, you know, just debating online about anti-capitalism as some, you know, future thing, it's like, no, like, what can you do to actually, you know, make capitalism a less important part of how you live your life every day, which means, you know, not obsessing over careers and all these kind of other things. So I think first of all, it might be useful to kind of think about, like, what do we actually mean by work? Because work's kind of a Works like mm-hmm. It has a lot of definitions depending on what like yeah. you depending on like what you mean by it, right? Is it just like wage labor? Is it just forced labor? You know, is cooking for yourself or your family considered work? Not always, but you know, like at times when I'm like relaxed, I quite enjoy cooking for friends and family. But certainly it can feel like work sometimes, especially if you just got home from like a work shift. So in a way, like work creates more work. And it isn't just about like wage labor or something. It can kind of apply to a lot of ways about how you live your life.
Laying down wood chips or sod, if that's like your job every day, can be like a miserable backbreaking process. If you actually have a huge yard or like own a little bit of land and you're making your own garden, that can be an intensely like the best part of your week.
It can be a great form of play. Yeah.
It's not the problem is not the individual tasks necessarily. It's what work is as a platonic kind of concept in our society.
Yeah.
And again, one of the things, and I think this is one of the things, speaking of, you talked about David Graeber earlier, who's an anarchist anthropologist and widely seen to be like one of the most brilliant anthropologists of his generation. He recently deceased. But a book that he wrote before he died with another fellow came out recently called The Dawn of Everything, that talks a lot about how, these ideas that kind of capitalism has a vested interest in you believing that the world was always hard in the way that it's hard, by which I mean, like, in order to get basic necessities, you have to make somebody else rich or find some grift of your own. And as opposed to like, life is always hard, but life didn't always involve labor the way we think about it. Labor has not been a constant in human civilization. And in fact, most of human civilization, people have not done a thing that we would recognize as labor.
And I think also, even if you go towards things that like look more like labor to us, right? Like, I don't know, like if you look at like feudal levies, mm-hmm. right? You're a peasant, you have to give some amount of grain to your lord. But like, okay, we work way longer the medieval peasants did, and not only do we work longer, it's something Graeber and David Wengro talk about in that book, is like, like not only do we work much longer, like the amount that we work would have been considered absolutely, like even a feudal lord would look at that much work and go, no, like this is like,
and
I think there's another, Graeber has another point. He wrote a piece called Turning Modes of Production Inside Out, where he has this argument that like, okay, so if you take, you know, if you take like Plato, right, you're like, you take any of the Greek philosophers, even the conservative ones, and you show them this, the thing that we do every day, right? You're completely under the command of another person for like at least a third, probably more of your day.
Yeah, I monitor you and Garrison's bathroom breaks. I look at your texts with family and friends. It's really not a good situation. Yeah,
it's an incredibly strict surveillance state.
Mm-hmm.
From Robert Evans.
Yeah,
yeah. This is like you know, if you show a Greek person that this is the apocalypse to them, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen, is every single person in society has like essentially been reduced to a slave, and you know, that's bad, and it doesn't have to be like that.
It's not that they've been, because I want to push back on that terminology because it can go to some uncomfortable places. It's not that they are treated as a slave. It's that in the hours in which they are expected to labor, there's a societal expectation that they act as the property of whoever owns the business or manages them. Right? The idea that attitude from like working in a kitchen or working at a fast food restaurant, like if you can lean, you can clean. Like that attitude is saying you do not have any autonomy when you are at work. You are the property of the employer while you are at work. I think
the specific thing with Greece is that like, you know, the only way you could do that to someone in Greece is if you owned them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, like Greece has wage labor, right? But the only people who like it has wage labor, but it has wage labor for slaves. And that's like it, right? Like this, you know, and this is not, like, obviously not to say that like, you know, work, like having a job is the same thing as slavery, but it's to say that like the kinds of things that we think of as normal, like are things that like the people who, you know, the people who run the system, the people who, you know, get cited all the time to justify stuff would have looked at as like the worst thing that could possibly have happened to a society.
Yeah.
For sure.
Like daily life for a very substantial chunk of the American workforce would be a nightmare to large percentages of the human population prior to the modern period. Like it's if you think about it that way, like one of the things Graeber does a good job of going into is like the way in which and this is also something that comes up in Tribe by Younger, the way in which like during the early period of colonization of North America, it was very common for, you know, Europeans to leave the cities and towns being established behind and join up with indigenous
groups. And join with the tribes,
yeah. The reverse never happened. Like, yeah. Like not willingly, not without kidnapping being a part of it. And it's because, like, their attitude was they were looking at the lives these people were living in these cities and like, well, why would you agree to do that? And this is turning anyway. Garrison, you should take us back on the rails.
It's time for products and services.
You know what has nothing to do with the fact that human beings are forced to labor for basic necessities in order to keep up a system that steals the freedom of the many in order to provide impossible liberty to the few. You know what isn't related to that?
You sure?
The advertising,
yep, absolutely.
Industrial complex.
Not has nothing to do with it. Totally unrelated. Why would you say that, Garrison? By the way, did you know that McDonald's Egg Muffin is turning 50 years old and it's giving the breakfast
sandwich a price to match?
They're selling it for its original price of 63 cents during breakfast hour, 6 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., exclusively on the McDonald's app. Isn't that cool?
I can't.
Do you guys want Egg McMuffins for 63 cents? That's the original price.
I wonder what else the McDonald's app is looking at on my phone. Anyway, here's some ads.
Oh, we're back and we're talking about anti-work. We're talking about how work's kind of bullshit for our jobs.
Yeah. We sure are.
We sure are.
For sure.
So, you know, like, I mean, there's a lot of people who like enjoy stuff like gardening, fishing, carpentry, cooking, and even like, you know,
fist fighting,
computer programming, just for their own sake. Like a lot of the stuff that we like, quote unquote, need for society to function. A lot of those things people like doing as hobbies in their spare time.
For example, if you're a police officer, gunning down a man in cold blood might be kind of like your day job and like frustrating, and there's a lot of shit you have to deal with. If you're a mass shooter, though, you just love it. You know, you're just doing it for the pure love, and it's not work. It's not work for a mass shooter.
That is exactly what the Kyle Rittenhouse thing is, though. Actually, literally, that is what that is.
We're not going to get the verdict today. It doesn't look like
not today,
which isn't a bad sign. Anyway,
by the time this airs, it may already be done. But anyway, like a lot of people like doing those things without getting paid, and sometimes, you know, often like costing themselves money, right? A lot of these hobbies are costly in their own right. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting to, you know, think of a society where you're free to do those things when you feel like it, and mm-hmm. you don't need to drag yourself out of bed at you know, early in the morning to work a 10-hour shift as like a cash register.
And it's not just even when you feel like it, because there will be things that you have to do, even if
I will discuss this later. Yes.
Yeah. In any, like,
yes,
like
there, but it's, there is it's other not, things.
It's not work if you're going out and harvesting food that feeds you and your community. That's not like work in the sense that we talk about modern work.
The amount of extra energy we have by not having 10-hour horrible shifts that drain ourselves mentally and physically, and more with the amount of. Most of the work that we people do, as shown in David Graeber's bullshit jobs, is like not necessary. Like a lot of the work that we do as a whole is nonsense.
Yeah, there's some quibbling about, because the book was based off of a study, like a survey that kind of showed a very significant chunk of the labor workforce thinks their job is like pointless and doesn't do anything. And there's been some criticisms of that, but it is undoubted that a very significant amount of total labor time spent is stuff that isn't necessary for any reason of like making people's lives better.
And another part of like anti-work theories is looking at our society as it's built, you know, because it is tied to anarchism, and be like, how much of this is actually necessary? Like, do we really need a McRib? Like, do we, guys?
What are you, Garrison?
We do not.
Sophie,
we do not.
Sophie, call HR.
No,
call
we
HR.
Don't need a McRib.
We do not so, need a McRib. It's about, Garrison is 100%.
No,
listen
to I
them.
Did the company
listen
training, and they said you can't.
We don't need a McRib.
The company training says you can't attack someone for their religion, and Garrison just attacked the McRib, so.
That actually is, you know, it is a religion for a lot of people.
It
did
is.
You see that they did sell a McRib NFT a few weeks ago?
Don't
anyway.
Tell me Good. That shit. That is so upsetting.
God,
Thank God. Damn it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just like, saying, society with no money would yeah. not have NFTs.
Yeah.
So
it would
anyway.
Not.
Gosh.
But you know, thinking of like anti-work as the theory, you know, it's about cutting down those unnecessary things that fill people's time. And you know, and for a more, you know, forward looking sense, it's a general kind of like abolition of the producer and consumer based society. So you know, life is not dedicated to the production and consumption of goods and commodities. Mm-hmm. So you know, this applies not just to capitalism, but also to, you know, like state socialism, where, you know, work is still, you know, a big part of state socialism. And I think, you know, it's humans, it posits a future that humans can be way more free when they, you know, can reclaim their time from jobs and employment, instead of, you know, spending a lot of their time doing that, and then spending a lot of, like, not just time, but also just like their energy, right? Because even if you work, you know, 8 hours a day, you still have majority of the day to yourself, but you're exhausted. You can't do much. You yeah. can't do much, right? It drains you of everything. So. Yeah. You know, the main point, one of the main points of like of the abolition of work essay by Bob Black is about like just no one should work because work is as defined as like a forced labor practice, is you can kind of track this to being the source of most of the misery in the world from, you know, in individual people who are forced to do this. So, like, this is where a lot of their pain comes from. Is this forced labor concept? I think a good way, you know, there is, you know, the point that Robert brought up earlier is like, you know, what about the tasks that aren't fun? You know, what about the stuff that isn't maybe as enjoyable? You know, there's a list of things that
the standard response is who's going to clean up the poop? Right?
Who's
going
to clean the poop? Right. That's the thing. So, you know, I kind of look at this. As like I kind of look at this as like whenever I have to like turn the compost, which mm-hmm. is not my favorite thing to do. I don't look forward to having to turn over our massive, shitty, rotting compost pile. It's not my favorite thing.
Yeah, that's but... why we have the whip.
Oh, no.
But no, like if there's like friends around and we're playing music and we have like some like. I have like an iced tea or a Dr. Pepper, and we're like talking as we're turning the compost. It's a lot more doable, you know. It's one task that's going to help all of us in the future, and I'm not getting watched over by a boss to fill a certain quota so I can pay my rent, right? It's this thing that helps everybody, and I do it because I want the goal of it to succeed. So there's always gonna be tasks that are less pleasant than others. Now what we can do is, you know, imagine a world where the amount of work actually needed to be done is greatly reduced, so that the tasks that are necessary and some of them unpleasant can be spread out and among more people, because less people will be wasting upwards of 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, doing mostly pointless time filling work. Because yeah, there's gonna be things that suck, and we'll be able to do those a lot better if there's more people and we don't have to waste our times yep. doing stuff that is honestly a lot more bullshit than actually scooping bullshit. Wow, what a good joke.
Speaking of Thanks. Scooping
good
bullshit,
work,
it's time for it's time to scoop up some more ads.
Wait, really? Haven't we done two?
No, we only did one.
Oh, all right.
We went a while without doing one.
Guys, listen to the products, because everyone loves a service. It's not like the thing we're talking about is bad. It's different than that, so it's fine.
Yep, we're back, and we're still talking about anti-work. I do. This is something that the Crime Think workbook points out, and you know, it's a pretty obvious thing. I've certainly thought of this before. Is that, you know, we've been told that the like technological progress will soon liberate humanity from the need to do work, or from, you know, having to do work as much. And today we have the capabilities that, you know, our ancestors couldn't have even imagined for the amount of work that we could get done. But these predictions still like aren't true. We're still working more than ever, even though we have developed so much technologically. We're still working more than ever, and I think it's silly to think that we'll reach like a magic threshold where somehow now we have less work to do because we'll have like, I don't know, like robots being a server at a McDonald's or whatever, right? There still is forcing people into this thing because this is the only way that we can live, right? We've built our whole society around getting work for money, so this is the only thing that we can do.
Yeah, David Graeber, one of the things he argues in Bullshit Jobs is that basically, you know, okay, so if you have, like, you have the Soviet economy, right? Okay, so the Soviet economy has a policy of full employment. And for a little bit, they were like, okay, what if we make everyone work less? And then they stopped, and then, like, everything went to shit. So, you know, okay, but if you can't make people work less hours and everyone has to work, what do you do? It was like, okay, well, you pay a bunch of people to, like, stand at a doorway, right? Now, we also do this, and one of Graeber's, like, funniest points that he brings up is that the total number of bureaucrats in the ex-USSR, like, increased dramatically after the USSR fell, which is incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, what it points to is that, like, yeah, you know, Graeber called this total bureaucratization, which is that, you know, what we did instead of, like, giving ourselves more free time is created this just, like, endless, enormous, incredibly violent bureaucracy that all of us have to spend all of our time, like, dealing with bullshit from our insurance companies and, like, fighting with, like, the Comcast service person and all of this just, like, you know, incredibly violent, dehumanizing stuff that, you know, it's a make-work program, right? But it's a make-work program that just, the work that it makes is making everyone's lives miserable, and we could just not do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we could. It's always more complicated than that, right? Because the thing that is, when we talk about anti-work, the thing that's on the other side of this is like, okay, well, what if you get a kid? How are you going to feed that kid? Like, how are you going to keep him in a house? Like, how? Not just if you have a kid, but like, yeah, you people die in our society when they do not have access to adequate resources, and the only way to have access to adequate resources is to be born rich or to work. Those are your options.
Yeah, this is why I think
without robust mutual aid and a commitment by a lot of people to try to make sure that a lifestyle is sustainable outside of, you know, this system. Like, it's not impossible, but it's somewhere along the line there has to be input. I mean,
yeah,
you can
like
be,
we've been talking
live
about
in a squat and be a freegan, but yeah.
We've been talking about anti-work as kind of a broad, hopeful, like, future goal in some other, you know, post-scarcity. Well, not post-scarcity, but, a post-crumbling, post-kind of collapse future. But I think, you know, for us now, as, you know, the anti-work subreddit is about people now, right? The anti-work subreddit is not about a future world. I think the anti-work now is, like, an alternative to the obsession with living your life with the goal of a career.
Yes,
it's about, you know, it's like a project to radically reframe how we think of work and leisure. It's like a cognitive antidote to like to this culture of like hustle and hard work, which is like taken over our minds and our time. So if like,
yes,
for those who can't just resign from their job for whatever reason, whatever moment, the anti-work is about like thinking of this movement as like the antithesis to the mainstream capitalist hustle culture. You know, that includes like slacking off more, finding ways to waste time, possibly even finding ways to steal or scam your boss. I've read certain alleged ways of doing this inside the anti-work.
Yeah, Garrison's
subreddit.
Had my car for days. I don't even know where they got it from, but yeah.
No, but like, you know, like there is, you know, like ways to like scam whatever corporation you work for, right? There's been examples shared in the anti-reddit in the anti-work subreddit. So, you know, it's about actually like finding, you know, making sure that you hate your work because you should, and then figuring out how to live your life with that in mind. And I think one of the really hard parts about this is for people who like kind of like their job, for people who are like, who like either like their job or think it's like kind of important or like they're special to have it, right? It's like, oh, you're like, I'm lucky to have such a good job. Because like when you're stuck in that mindset, you can often put in like a lot of extra unpaid labor because you think it's important. Because you're like, oh no, this is worth doing because it's going to have some like benefit to the world. So you end up like putting in actually more work that you don't actually get paid for. And like, it's about trying to like kill that instinct as well. So that's a whole way to think about like working. Cause like we're going to be stuck. A lot of people are going to be stuck doing it for a while. So how can we kind of reframe what we do on the job and how kind of jobs live in our minds when we are at home?
And I think the best thing about what you've said, in my opinion, is the idea that like this is not, the importance is not on whether or not this it causes everyone to stop having to work immediately, like whether or not it leads to, directly to, like the measure of success of this movement isn't that nobody ever has to work again. That's a long-term goal. The measure of the success of this movement is that people accept en masse that no, the American dream, as it's sold to people, is not a good thing. It's not a thing to aspire to. Work is bullshit, and we should aspire to a society that doesn't do it. It's getting back, honestly, like it's getting back to some of the shit that people were talking about in like when the Jetsons was on TV. The idea that like, well, with labor-saving devices, the like a hard work week will be 4 hours, and like that's the way life will be for everybody, and like, and it's the acceptance that, like, no, a better future involves me not having – involves no one having to spend 40 hours a week of their limited human life working at a fucking Sonic or, like, listening to some middle manager berate them for not answering phones fast enough. That doesn't exist for any human being in a world that is achievable and better than the one that we live in. Like, convincing people of that and getting that to be widely accepted – is I think what I would consider the terms of victory in this particular struggle.
Yeah, kind of moving on from this side of things into like the Great Resignation and the other kind of things that people are doing. So in August alone, 4.3 million Americans voluntarily left their jobs, and the rate of people quitting increased to a decent record high of like 2.9%, according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. So, and this has been a growing trend. You can look at like, I think June was like a little under 4 million. August was 4.3. So like it was, you know, it's ramping. I don't know if we have data for September or October yet. This was the most recent one I could find. So yeah, like it's stuff is going up. People are because people are like a big part of the anti-work subreddit is like, yeah, if your job sucks, you can quit it and probably find another one that pays better in decent time, especially right now. Like right now, if your job is really terrible, you have a decent chance of finding a better one. This wasn't the case like 2 years ago. It is the case at this moment. So a lot of the anti-work subreddit's like, yeah, quit your job, like say fuck you to your boss and leave. Because if they're being shitty, then they don't deserve to have you. So resigning has been a big part of this, and there has been attempts at other kind of organized stuff, and this kind of falls into the same kind of traps as Seoul internet organizing kind of always does. So the big thing that they're organizing for is called Black Friday Blackout, which is about kind of trying to get everyone to. As many people as possible to not work Black Friday and not buy anything on Black Friday. So like a post from the subreddit here is like, spread the word, call in sick if you're forced to work on Black Friday, spend time with your family instead, remain at home and participate in your favorite activity on Friday, November 26th. Talk to your family and friends about your work-life struggles. Pass out flyers, join r/anti-work. So this is, you know, I think this kind of falls into the same, like, you know, general strike organized online stuff that we talked about before, how kind of like a lack of like real like in-person solidarity and like non-internet, you know, networking and organizing results in stuff like this. Just, you know, like proposed like one-day strikes or actions that are ultimately kind of non-effectual, right? Like they can be like a good symbol sometimes, but like, you know, it's not really going to matter that much, even if it works. Would I think it'd be cool if literally no store was open on Black Friday because everyone quit? Yeah, that would be rad. But that's not going to really happen. it would be fun if it did, but like realistically, it's not going to happen. And there is people on the subreddit who also point this out. There was a reply to this post that was like, "Oh look, another online call for a general strike with no union support whatsoever. Don't worry, y'all. This one's definitely going to work." So it's like, yeah, like a lot of people in the sub also recognize that, like, without like actual like organizing support, and in-person stuff and, you know, networks to support people on, like, you know, lengthy strikes, these types of things are mostly symbolic actions that will have, you know, in the end, little impact. They may make you feel powerful as you're doing them, which is, you know, which is good. That is a lot of activism is actually just about you feeling powerful in that moment. But, you know, as an end goal, it's important to think like this isn't going to reach whatever anti-work utopia, which I know people organizing it aren't thinking that. But, you know, it's important to keep this within context of like the limits of online organizing, you know. So yeah, a lot of people like recommend, you know, focusing on organizing your own workplace and community, having discussions with unions kind of in your area, part of the reply to this original like Black Friday blackout post that someone wrote seriously though, I would love for an actual general strike to kick off, but these online calls for general strikes with no union involvement, no demands, no supports for strikers of any kind, no nothing whatsoever beyond social media hashtags don't do anything. Focus on organizing your workplace and your community. Discuss with unions, which might be sympathetic to what criteria they might need from such a drastic action. There's a lot of unions on strike right now, so if there ever was a time to kick one off, it's now. Most general strikes in the past started off with specific strikes that started pulling in other unions and solidarity than anything else. Focus on that, and we might get somewhere. Which I think is a decent advice for mm-hmm. the people who are really dedicated onto this kind of like general strike thing. That is pretty good advice in my opinion.
I want to say something kind of briefly, just in general, about general strikes, because I think we've talked about it a lot on here, but like they're really, really hard. I mean, there's an example, like, and like just to get a picture of how, like how actually hard it is to pull off. There was one in Sudan in summer of 2019, and you know, I mean, this is in the middle of a revolution, right? The Sudan is incredibly highly organized, it's incredibly militant. People have been like, you know, I mean, the chant in the street is like, you cannot kill us, we are already dead. Like, you know, the whole revolution is being led by the Sudanese Professional Association, which is an association of like 17 trade unions, right? So this is a population that is enormously better organized than like anything really that exists in the U.S. And, you know, in the middle of the summer, the army opens fire and starts killing protesters. And so they call a general strike. And, you know, the turnout is massive, right? They have millions upon millions of people show up to the strike. And on day one, it's successful. And then on day two of the strike, people start having to pull out, especially people in the informal sector, because even with the level of organization they have, they can't support everyone. And by about day three, most of the strike has collapsed, because even with the level of organization they had, even with, you know, the coordination, even with the fact that they're in the middle of a revolution, they couldn't support particularly people in the informal sector. So this stuff is really, really, really hard. And
yeah, it is definitely hard.
Even highly organized, highly motivated people who are, you know, like literally willing to fight to the death will lose. And that's something that you have to sort of keep in mind when you're talking about this, because
a lot of people are more focused on kind of their individual resignations, finding other ways of making money, and just slacking off at work in general, because those are a lot easier than trying to organize a mass general strike right now. And I think one of the really optimistic things about this whole anti-work thing, including the subreddit, is that it has made some bank executives kind of nervous.
Yeah.
there was a fantastic article by Yahoo Finance. Now by fantastic, I mean funny for me. You know, they did not think it was as funny. They talked with like the Goldman Sachs CEO, they pointed to the anti-work subreddit being what was the phrase? A long run risk to labor force participation.
Good. This is, see, that when I first read that in the article, I just like flashed to my head, to that scene from Starship Troopers where Neil Patrick Harris puts his hand on the brain bug and goes, "It's afraid! It's afraid!"
Yeah. Yeah. He said, "We see some risk that workers will elect to maintain out of the workforce for longer, provided they can afford to do so." Pretty good stuff.
And another thing that's worth mentioning that hasn't been talked about very much is that, so this is actually kind of working in some sense. Like the last few months, or 2020 in general, the last few months in particular, have seen basically like the highest levels of wage increases that we've seen in decades. So, you know, like, we haven't overthrown capitalism yet, but like, if you can keep quitting your job at your regular job, work less, keep doing it, it's working.
Yeah, this is stuff I wish we need to, in the future, I would like us to be focusing more on stuff like that. Like this, that is a legitimately, as you point out, Chris, there's a lot of reasons to be very optimistic about some of the numbers that we're getting from what is happening to labor right now. And it is important, as we all, like right now, we're all miserable because we're sweating through the Rittenhouse case. It is important to talk about stuff like that, that like, yeah, some shit people's doing is hitting home. Some motherfuckers have found the glowy, vulnerable spot on the boss monster, and it's
turns
doing
out it's
the
just
weird.
Not working.
Yeah, it's just not working. Yeah, like again, as we started the series with, like, yeah, general strike is kind of the best available solution.
Yeah.
Or path to a solution that I can find. But anyway, what else
I think,
we got, Garrison?
I think that does it for us today. I know.
Is that a sode?
Chris
yeah,
has
we'll do more.
Special like sequel stuff mm-hmm. happening. So tune in tomorrow
for
our listeners.
Anti-work in China.
And
for,
like all of the best lit. Sequels, this one will be directed by James Cameron. So we're all very excited.
To bring our pal James onto the pod.
To bring our pal James and the reanimated corpse of Stan Winston. It's going to be amazing. God. So check it out.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.